It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Alongside former Packer Brian Belaga, here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
From Summerfest, it is the Brian Belaga Homer Hour, and this may be confusing to people, given my opinion to this point, but we are now, and have finally made it to where it is appropriate to talk about the historic possibilities if the U.S. was to win its next game. I have spent time trying to inform people that the NFL preseason games were bogus, and to say that this last win was historic is also bogus. But they win the next one. They get to the Elite Eight. It has happened once since 1930, when I remember doing my first World Cup. It is the Brian Belaga Homer Hour. He is a huge soccer fan. I don't know that we got into the historic information, like, how did that happen? But first of all, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And did the Miz pitch today?
The Miz pitched today, gave up two home runs, and gave up five runs, but only one was earned. In five innings, one earned run, 10 strikeouts. His ERA actually went down, though they did lose. And when he gives up two home runs, you have to mention that as well. But
yep.
So
shocking.
The sad part, yeah. Sad part is he won't be pitching again. But I feel for you, because I think this is when you wish it didn't take so damn long from one World Cup game to the next.
I mean, I agree.
The next one's till Monday. I'll defer to you. How much time do soccer players need from one game to the next? Three, maybe?
Well, I mean, some of these guys are running 5-6 miles a game.
Okay. All right. So playing, maybe the answer is five. Maybe it is they need this much.
Yeah.
And then there's the Friday, Saturday, yeah. Sunday.
Then there's the travel and then the preparation and all that. So,
okay.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. I think that's appropriate for in between games. It's less than what we get most of the time.
And is that appropriate or not? I'm sorry. I think I have no idea. Only you can compare what you do to your body in the NFL versus what they do to their body in World Cup soccer. You can take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously football's a little more physical, and the two extra days are pretty helpful, I'm not going to lie. Because you
beat each other up more than in soccer. Yeah.
Yeah, you play on Sunday, and your body finally starts feeling good on Thursday or Friday. So, yeah, I would say that we need a little more time. But, yeah, I think the 5 days for them is appropriate. I think that's a good enough break to recover, travel, game plan, do all that. I think that's plenty.
Discussion about soccer. Brian Belaga, if you don't want soccer, don't worry, because the Brian Belaga, Jason Wilde segment is coming up in a few minutes, and they can talk about whatever they want. But before we get to that, all right, I pride myself in not knowing some stuff. So before we get to how good is Belgium, like, they've been very good, but their players are kind of getting older. I would say, based on the discussion we just had with Ben Bruss, that you would say the United States is a slight favorite, probably because they're at home. How close to accurate is that to your belief going into the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a slight favorite just to – if I guess if they were playing in Europe, they probably wouldn't be a slight favorite. So I would say how they're playing and being on home soil, yeah, edges them out to being a home favorite. I think you look at the big picture of this thing, they've been playing much better than Belgium in general over the tournament, right? Like game to game.
I have no idea. I'm going to agree with whatever you say. Yeah, Belgium was down 2-0. I thought they were going to lose to Senegal, but I just checked the rankings, and Senegal and Belgium were almost next to each other in terms of world ranking. So it really, it wouldn't have been a huge surprise if Senegal won. So, right?
No, and Senegal outplayed them for about 80 minutes, and that's the way the story went. Belgium, like you said, has good players, but they're aging. And that's where I think the United States is going to be able to take advantage of them, is how they run and their stamina and how they're able to get up and down the field and press and go nonstop, right? And Belgium wants to slow the game down. They want their playmakers to get on the ball and have control throughout the middle of the field and slow things down and pass and move. Where the United States, they do those things, but they do it at a lot faster pace. They want to get up and down the field a lot quicker and get in those transition games with teams. And that's not Belgium's game, because that's how they got cut open by Senegal. Senegal cut them open in the transition game. And that's probably what Pochettino is going to be looking at, unless obviously Belgium makes major personnel changes for the next game and the lineup looks completely different. But that'll be something he has to adjust to on the day up.
Oh, I like that. They cut them open. I've never heard you use that for football. Is that a soccer term?
Yeah, quite.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, a little bit more now, soccer-ish.
All right, I have a question for you. So I'm watching the U.S. against Bosnia. In the first half, Bosnia is like, they might as well have just been on in chairs. All 10 of them were near their goalie in like 3-3-4. I don't know what the number is, but it's like they weren't trying to do anything other than prevent the U.S. from scoring. So I thought, well, maybe the U.S. is a slight, and the U.S. is, you know, moving it around. And it does appear, like you said, that they're looking for an opening. That's what my wife said. And then late in the game, Bosnia's going like crazy. And these guys are fast. And I'm thinking, like, coach, what the hell is your problem? I would, if I saw that talent or that athleticism, I'd have let my Bosnia team go head-to-head and be very aggressive with the U.S. and think I have pretty good chances. What? Explain the game, because, like, they were impressive at the end. Of course, you know, they're down and they have to score, but I don't know why you wouldn't – why they wouldn't have taken that approach for the whole game, because when they were motivated, damn, they looked pretty good. Take it away, coach.
Yeah, I mean, well, the second half of the game, the United States were down to 10 men, right? There was a red card given, and they were down to 10 men, so Bosnia had a man advantage, and they were losing, so they were going to be much more aggressive. And I think what Bosnia was concerned about, especially early on, if they decided to do what you mentioned and be more aggressive and push numbers forward, they'd get hit on counterattacks, and their speed on the back end wouldn't be able to keep up with the wingers and the striker and the midfield play of the United States. So that's what they were concerned about.
Right. I knew there was an answer.
Yeah.
So but, as you're watching it, what are you thinking about the first? Well, it's just the 30, 35 minutes, or this is fine. This tells me that Bosnia doesn't think they're that good. Or how are you watching it and analyzing what you're watching for the first, I would say, 30 minutes of the game?
Yeah, I mean, watching the first 30 minutes, it was pretty much one-way traffic and all control, and it was, to me, it was just a matter of time. I'm going, when is this goal going to go in, right? Like, the United States, they had all the opportunities, they had all the possession, they had all the control. I mean, Bosnia had a couple moments here and there, but nothing dangerous or too dangerous.
Okay.
And then, for me, it was all one-way traffic, and it was a matter of time, right? It was just a matter of time, and they had the offside goal.
Did that seem offside to you? I didn't understand that. It seemed like he was offside early, but then there were a couple passes or movement to where by that time it seemed like he wasn't offside, but I want to, again, stress that I have no idea what I'm talking about, and I'm proud that I don't, but go ahead.
Yeah, he was offside. He was offside. Like, quite a bit.
But, go ahead. No one complained, so I knew I was wrong.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's it just shows you that space was being opened up and created is essentially what I'm getting at, right? Space was starting – when they started to get later into that half, space started to open up and create, and they figured out the patterns to kind of infiltrate that back line of five that Bosnia was putting out there. That's essentially what it was. It was five guys, and then –
it was 5-3-3 or something like that.
Yeah, and they were just essentially what they call in soccer, parking the bus.
Right, and then they hope every once in a while that maybe they can get somebody can sneak out and they make one long pass to one guy or something, right? And
yes, that's exactly.
That doesn't happen very often. So when I'm watching something like that, I should be thinking, well, U.S. Must be the better team. Right, Bosny, well, you don't want to play that way, or do some people play conservative and they win that way because they're used to winning 1-0, or I don't know, take it away again?
No, some teams definitely have that strategy. That's definitely some team strategy is that's how they're going to do it. They're going to play counterattack soccer. They're going to try to, you know, kind of defend, and then when the offensive team commits too much, you know, too many men forward, a loose ball breaks and they hit you on the counterattack.
Oh, somebody said that about Mexico, that they have not given up a goal. They haven't given up one goal in the World Cup.
That's correct.
I don't know if that's how they play.
They're a little more attacking. They just don't sit back and play defense.
Are they playing England next? Because whoever they're playing, the people were saying they have no idea what it's like to play in Mexico or Mexico City. They win like 99.5% of their games when they play there at home or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they play England in the Azteca. Yes. I don't think they've lost there in like 33 competitive matches.
Right.
So it they doesn't go. Look good.
There's
it
no
doesn't
way.
Look good.
I don't know. They said there's no way England has any idea what it's like. I don't know. I guess because they cheer so loudly. I don't know. I'll have to watch it just to see if it seems that much different. All right, now, so the most impressive thing to you about the U.S. team so far?
Well, I mean, I think how fluid they look. Their passing and their movement. Like, you watched them over a year ago or even the last World Cup, right? Like, nothing looked fluid. It looked choppy. It looked like they had no idea.
They had a different coach, though, right?
Yeah, it was Berhalter, one of the kids' dads on the team.
All right.
Which is nepotism to its finest. But, again, that's another conversation.
Yeah, it is.
But they just look like they didn't have a plan. This team looks like they know exactly what they want to do, how they need to do it, and it gets done over and over and over again. Guys are almost thinking for each other and making the proper runs in behind each other, and the passes are just moving, and it just looks clean, right? And to me, that's the biggest thing. And also, like, when they go down to 10 men last night, 4 years ago, I would have thought, all right, Bosnia is going to get one or at least two here, and they're going to win this game. Like, that 4 years ago, that would have been my thought. I didn't think that at all. What I kept telling my wife on the couch was, go get another one. Go get another goal. Like, attack Bosnia. Don't sit back. Attack Bosnia and bring the game to them. Make them actually defend. Because they want to get forward now because the United States was down a guy. But attack them. And they did. They did. And that's something to me that wouldn't have happened 4 years ago. So, like, to me, it's just very impressive to see how they're playing and the confidence that they have and that the continuity of that team right now. It's very fun to watch.
The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, appropriately talking about soccer, because if the U.S. can win the game on Monday, they will accomplish what has been done only once in the last 95 years. Would you say, not on this show, but to someone else, this is what I thought they were? They have done nothing so far, the U.S. team, that's really surprised me. I thought they were that good or playing that well, or has anything they've accomplished surprised you?
No, it's... It's been pleasantly surprising, honestly. You and I talked about it, their preseason or their pre-World Cup friendlies that they didn't look great in, and how much stock do you put into that? Not much, but you still have to look at what's being done on the field and judge what you see, right? Like, that's
you got to be pretty damn confident as a coach to be okay with that, given that you think that everything's okay, we'll be fine. Clearly, that seems... What was the case, right? I mean,
That's why, like, when they played that first game and you win the way you did, and then you play the second game and you win the way you did there. And, and then you go down to 10 men in the first knockout round and you continue to perform at a high level and win that game 2-0, like, pleasantly surprised. And a lot of players stepping up and playing much better than what I recall them playing, obviously, 4 years ago. They're a little bit older and a little bit more mature, but still better than what I expected, and it's very fun to watch.
And lastly, before we break for the Brian Bulaga, Jason Wilde segment, How big a loss is the red card in terms of, you know, U.S. winning? If they lose, are you going to say, man, or no one player on their team, the U.S. team, is that good? What? How big? What's your level of concern, 1 to 10, meaning it's over being bad because of the loss of the player?
I'm at like a 6 with that. I'm at a 6 concern level because Bellingham is a very, very talented striker, and he finds space and he's able to get off shots with his left and his right. Like he's very good with both feet, and he's physical. He stresses out center backs and with his movement and runs. So I'm nervous about it just because of how big he's been for them. It's just a matter of how Pochettino now adjusts the lineup to make up for that and what he's able to do tactically to fill that void for a game. I think he can do it because I think they have some players that can move in there and not do the same thing as Balogun, but try to, like, mitigate the loss is my thing. They can be dangerous enough that the rest of the team doesn't get impacted by it. And that's what I think that they can do.
And you didn't add it, but I will because I know you're thinking it. This team has proven already to be able to handle things.
Yeah.
So this is one more thing they have to handle, and their recent resume would say if any American team could handle it, they are. You wish they didn't have to handle one more thing, but if they win, you will say on Tuesday, I told you, I believe this people can handle it. So I think that probably creates less concern than would normally be the case.
Accurate? I would agree. Yep,
yeah.
I would agree with that.
We're leaving on that because anytime you agree with something I said about soccer, I'm amazed. All right, Jason Wilde and Brian Bulaga, and they get to talk about whatever they want next.
Live ESPN.
Jason Wilde, all Packers all the time because he's 3-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year. He is on the Jason Wilde Yingling Hotline. This is the Brian Bulaga, Jason Wilde segment. And while Aaron Rodgers said, Homer, you're not a very good listener, I am for this segment. Take it away, soccer expert Brian Bulaga.
Jason, good evening. How are you?
Well, better than the Miz was today for Uncle Homer.
Yeah.
Homer's bad fielding behind him. ERA, 5 innings, 1 earned run, 10 strikeouts. His ERA is still 1.47. But, yes, he gave up 2 home runs. That's also, to be honest, not good. Take it away. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's all right. It's all right. So, Jason,
listener, though.
I get we're in, like, the dead period now of the Packers. So, like, I was on my little wagering app, and I'm just looking through all the teams' win-loss totals and things like that. And I'm not – you know, that's all speculative right now. And I think the Packers are at 9.5 or whatever. I don't even know. I think it was at 9.5. But in your opinion, what at this point, right? And say you get Micah back at week 7 or 8, right? What in your opinion is a good season for the Green Bay Packers? What is acceptable? What is a good season in Green Bay? What does that look like?
Good question. So, as I often do, much to the chagrin of your good friend Mark Tauscher and your mentor, who meant so much to you as you grew into the player that you became, I'm going to answer your question first with a question, which is this. When you think about this team, what do you expect from them? Because, and it pains me to say that Alex Stroh is smart. But he was when we did our State of the Packers because he went a little bit too far. But he said, I mean, I don't know what to expect of this team. I could see they could go 6-11, which I didn't agree with, and they could go to the Super Bowl. I just don't have a great feel for what I should expect. Like, my gut tells me that they will be in a dogfight, even with all the issues that the Lions have had, obviously, with their personnel. And some situations that have come up. they'll be in a dogfight to the end of the year on winning the division. Maybe they win it, maybe they don't, but I expect them to make the playoffs, barring catastrophic injuries that are even worse than last year's. I expect them, if they play at home, to win a playoff game and reach a divisional round game. And that's a crapshoot, right? You never know. Playoff, it's any given Sunday or whatever day they're playing. But, like, I can see them playing in the NFC Championship game. I can also see them finishing 8-9 if they have some things go against
really?
Them.
Really? 8-9?
Yeah. Because I think they've got some star players that, and some of them will be back right away and others not as soon. I think I like their skill position guys, even though Bill Barnwell doesn't see them as anything more than a middling group. But I can also see how their corners, their pass rush, and their offensive line could be their undoing. So I don't know what to expect. I know what would be disappointing, but like a successful season to me, they got to win a playoff game. I don't care if they win the division or not. I know Tausch is big on winning the division. But they got to win a playoff game. And then, obviously, if you're a Packers fan, ideally, they win another one and they make an NFC Championship game appearance. I took some heat for saying that I think that they are set up to be a true Super Bowl team. And I'm not saying they can't make it this year. Right? Like, 95, the Packers arrived early. I know, Brian, you were just a wee one at the time.
Yes.
But that was the year before I started covering the team. And they go out to San Francisco in a divisional round game, and they go and they beat the defending Super Bowl champs at their place. And they kind of announce their presence with authority. And then they actually have a lead in Dallas in the NFC Championship game, but they ultimately lose. And I could see this team kind of having that kind of breakthrough, but not quite get there. But I keep looking at you traded for Micah. Jordan, it's this year and next year, and then his cap number goes through the roof. So they need him to elevate to the higher plan that he's yet to reach. They've got they're going to have all their best players tied up long-term in contracts, and Micah Parsons will be healthy theoretically for the entire season. So I'm looking at them, and they got like 12 draft picks. So I look at 2027 as kind of their year. And if they arrive early in 2026, great. But you got to take steps forward. I know the NFL is different than when I started covering them. But, like, I feel like there's still something of a progression for teams. And, yes, sometimes you can skip steps, like New England did this year, for example. But the bottom line is you know, after back-to-back years where they lost first-round playoff games on the road, after three consecutive years where they were the number seven seed, I would like to see them win the division, win a playoff game, and that constitutes progress. And if I was a Packers fan, that would make me happy but not satisfied.
So I guess my question then off of that is, if they're a seven seed and win a playoff game, that's successful.
Yeah. So I mean, you played on a team that was a six seed, right, and went and won the Super Bowl. And you played on number one seeds that – didn't get there. I mean, it's, you know, to me, yeah, obviously I care about the journey and I love chronicling it, but at the end of the day, like, what do you do? You know, what did Rodgers used to say? You earn your paycheck during the regular season and you write your legacy during the postseason. He's right. Like, yeah, you make all your money and you guys should, and especially since, you know, you gotta make sure you have your health care covered later in life. And then in the playoffs is when you become legends. And all those guys, including you, as the youngest player ever to start a Super Bowl, get to say, hey, we are legends. Legends of the fall. And since then, we're 16 years and counting, since the Packers did it. And I don't think this is the year, but I will not be flabbergasted if somehow they find a way like the 2010 team did.
Now, do you think that if there's going to be one, I guess I look at it too, I mean, because there's, like you said, some of the positions that could be the trap for the team, right? A couple of the downfalls. If you had to pick out one, and we could say offensive line because that's what I like to talk about, but what position group do you think is going to be potentially the biggest struggle bus of the season?
So I think there's a couple of ones, obviously, and I think they're probably the same ones you're thinking of. First of all, I know I sound like Encanto, which is one of my favorite Disney films. We don't talk about Keyshawn, no, because I've talked about him enough. But I don't think that's the strength of their team. Now, I don't know what Brandon Cisse is going to be. I don't know what Benjamin St. Juice is going to be. But on paper, Keyshawn's got something to prove in a contract year, and Carrington Valentine has something to prove in a contract year. So we'll see what that position is. But that doesn't feel like – I mean, remember, I covered a team with Al Harris and Charles Woodson at corner. Like, I've seen what happened. And then I covered Tremont Williams, who went from unwanted to being a all-pro and top-five corner in the league. So they don't have a guy like that. We've talked so much with you because of your expertise about their offensive line. And what bothers me, and I went through this with Homer earlier in the week, and he tried to interrupt me and say there's no questions about Zach Tom, but there is, obviously, because of the injuries coming off of.
There's no question about Zach Tom. Thank you.
Brian, tell him.
Well, there is a question, and that's how he's going to recover from his knee.
Yeah.
He's
a good player.
No, we're just questioning how long it takes for him to get back to being the best offensive lineman.
Well, that's the question.
Yeah.
Okay. Not a very big question.
It's because he's had two seasons in a row now where he's been a little hobbled, mm-hmm. right? Like, and obviously right. last year, the patella deal, and I know what he said, what he had done to it, at least what I remember talking to you, Jason, that he had part of the patella just removed, not repaired. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I don't know anything about the patella. I've never injured it. So I have no idea.
Lucky you.
Yeah. No, they just used part of my patella for both my ACLs. That's the only difference.
See, that's the whole idea, though, right? Like, if they're able to take some of your patellar tendon to fix your ACL, then obviously the patellar tendon regenerates itself, and that was the thought process. But you're right. When he told me that, I'm not going to be melodramatic and say I almost fell to the floor. But between him telling me that they didn't actually repair it and that it heals itself after you trim away the damaged part, and then him telling me that he wants to play in a preseason game to make sure he's ready, I don't know what was more stunning from him.
Yeah, and like I think he obviously can get back and play his normal style of football, but it's just – you need to see it, right? Like, and there's going to be a progression for him whenever he gets back into training camp. And obviously, if he plays preseason, there's a progression of loading that mm-hmm. knee again and seeing how that feels. And that's my biggest question, right? Is how does that, that knee recover and heal? And how's he moving on it? That's really it.
And to Homer's point, if we were power ranking the five questions of just how good is Jordan Morgan going to be at left tackle, is Aaron Banks going to be the player that they expected him to be when they paid him? And is he going to stay healthy enough to be productive? Is Sean Ryan going to make a major step at center with 9 games of starts under his belt there now? And who's going to be their right guard? Is it going to be Belton? Is it going to be the Jagger bomb? And then the Tom question. Like, I would say Zach Tom is the fifth of the five questions, but there is a question at each of those spots.
Yes, but yes. Only seriously if you, either one of you, is going to tell me you're worried that he may never be able to come back and be as good
as he has been.
And I don't think either of you are saying that.
I'm worried that the last 2 years, we know how good of a player he is. It is definitely the fifth of the five questions if you're putting them in most concerning to least concerning order. But
I'll accept that.
I mean, he never regained his strength during the 24 season from the torn pec. So he's basically the one-armed man from The Fugitive out there. And then last year, don't forget, the patellar tendon was just the capper. Like, he had the adductor or the sports hernia, whatever you want to call that. He had that. Then he had an ankle. Then he had something else. Like, he I love Zach Tom, not as much as Brian and Tausch do because they play the position. But I love a healthy Zach Tom. I just haven't seen him in a long time.
Right. Now, if either of you said you're worried about his health, then I put that at number one. I mean, I understand there's a recovery. But if either of you said, I'm concerned of the possible seriousness, that becomes number one. Because
no, I think
he's
just been unlucky.
Okay. All right. I'm glad to hear that. Both, you think the same, Brian? Okay. All right.
Yeah. I don't – like, he's not the number one concern because I think he's going to recover. It's just how long it takes him to get into his groove, right? And that's really what it comes down to for me.
Then he's a Micah Parsons to some degree.
Well, I think he's going to start day one, don't you, Jason? Isn't that the
– That is certainly – I mean, he says he wants to be ready for the first day of training camp. And I love Zach because, you know, he doesn't like to talk to the media very much. He does it begrudgingly, but he and I have a good rapport where he has never turned me down, which I can't even say about you, Bulaga. And but I have
wait
the kind
a minute.
Of relationship.
How many times did Bulaga turn you down? I'd like to know
Probably once or twice. Only once or twice, I'm sure.
Brian, what's the accurate number? Because I know you'll know it exactly.
I mean, it probably was only once or twice. I mean, it just it depends on what they
Then to bring it up is making a bigger deal than it really was. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. But he also, in fairness to Brian, he became a great elder statesman in the locker room. When he was young and all those veteran guys were around him, only Corey Linsley was more nervous about saying anything around these other clowns that were going to get after him.
Yeah,
but
this
my
is
point
good stuff.
Is that with Zach, when he said he wants to be ready for the first day of camp, I didn't even follow up. I gave him a look. And he laughed, so I think he will be on a progression. But again, what I love about one of the many things I love about Zach Tom, and this is the kind of stuff we should clip for social media. What I love about him is he is in the Tausch Bulaga lineage. Like, he always wants to practice. He is conscientious to beat the band, and he's an awesome teammate. And so they need him to be out there, A, because he's a really good player, but I think he also sets the tone, and him being out there gives everyone else confidence. And there are some guys on that line, especially not knowing who's going to be for certain the right guard, that are going to need him to give them that confidence. So he is really, really important, and he will be highly ranked in my most important Packers list when it comes out starting next week.
All right, we've run out of time. Other than the question for both of you, at the start of the game, who do you want, Caleb Williams or Jordan Love? And in a close game with 5 minutes left, who do you want, Jordan Love or Caleb Williams? That's for the future. I don't want to agree
want
with
Rodgers.
You, Jason. Yeah, I don't want to agree with you and said you like this rivalry because I don't. I'd like crushing all the teams in the division. But I do believe the discussion and battle of Jordan Love and Caleb Williams will go for at least 5 years in terms of
you don't assessing. Say. That's interesting.
But I still want to.
All right, guys.
I still hope the Packers crush them by 50.
I know
game.
You do, but it's more interesting this way. All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
All right, thanks, Jason Wilde, All Packers All the Time. The Brian Bulaga, Jason Wilde segment. It's the best segment on the Homer Hour all week, and he is because he's 3-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year. He is in the Yingling Jason Wilde hotline. And when Brian Bulaga gets into the Packer Hall of Fame, which you will, then he will have the Brian Bulaga Yingling hotline. Next. The Brewers lost. The Miz lost in 5 innings. He struck out 10. He gave up, I think, 5 runs, a couple of home runs, but only 1 run was earned, so his ERA still is incredibly low. This is the Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. The soccer win against Bosnia averaged 24.5 million viewers on Fox, peaking at 31.8 million, to which I said That means Monday will average over 30 million. That's when they play their next game against Belgium. I know you'll agree with that. Our Discount Liquor Twitter poll question, the easiest one ever for you, Brian. You have three choices. I watch soccer, and I watched last night. I never watched soccer, but I watched last night. Or I never watched soccer, and I didn't watch last night. I know you're part of the first group, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. You were discussing, and I bothered Jason when I continue to bring stuff up, but I'm worried about Zach Tom, and because, like, everybody says, I don't know anything about the patellar, and I'm worried that he may not be able to be as good as he's been because of injuries. I'm not leading with that, and I'm happy when both of you don't say it, but I think that's a more reasonable concern, or maybe it's not. It's like, oh, no, he'll come back. No, it's even if he comes back because he is the way he is it possible that he just can't be as good as he's been because of those injuries? Take it away, Doc.
Yeah, so with the patella, again, I've only had that impacted based on the doctors using part of my patella for my ACL reconstruction. And all my recoveries went really well with that. Like, I never had patella tendonitis. I never had any issues with it. So, like, that's about as far as my knowledge goes when the patella gets impacted that way. Now, what Zach Tom had, injuring part of the patella, then having them remove part of the patella, then it heals. I'd imagine it's very similar, or can be similar, to using part of it for the ACL. You remove part of it, use it for an ACL, and then that rest of it heals back up, and you're on your merry way. So I have to assume.
Any other teammates that you know that had that similar injury to be able to?
No, I don't know a single guy that ever hurt a patella. So that's why I don't have much knowledge in it. I mean, my whole thing is, as long as he doesn't rush the thing back too soon and he aggravates the patella and he gets patella tendonitis in it and it's a hard time bending, he'll be fine, right? He has to ease into it. And if he eases into it properly and follows the protocol that the trainers have out for him and slowly works his way back into training camp, he'll be fine. And there's no doubt about that Zach Tom will be fine by the time we get to week three of the preseason and week one.
All right, check. I can take it off the checklist. You don't have to worry about that. All right, now, Caleb Williams and Jordan Love, which I mentioned in presuming this is good, but I think that that's – my view is there's going to be a debate because I think they're two different quarterbacks. Jordan Love is more consistent, and Caleb has one of those – he's one of those players that can suck for most of the game and play great at the end. I remember that specifically. I don't want to bring the Seattle game up, but I am, because I thought of that with Russell Wilson. He's been horrible the whole game, but you better know that I learned this when he was at Wisconsin. He can suck for the whole game and then all of a sudden look like Aaron Rodgers the last couple minutes. So you better, you know, that's why I wanted the team to be a little bit more aggressive than they were. But that aside, and I think that with Jordan Love may always be better, but with the game on the line and 4 minutes left, Caleb Williams has always already shown the ability to suck and then all of a sudden do incredible things. You take all of that from there.
Yeah, and obviously what Caleb Williams did last year, especially to the Packers, is pretty special. I'm not going to lie. Like, it was unbelievable to watch how he was able to do that. But I feel like some of those things were blind luck, man. Some of those throws, some of the things that happened. Yeah. Like, I just feel like if Micah Parsons is the one running at him and rushing him, he doesn't get half those throws off. Like, I just look at things a certain way.
Yeah, you think they're going to even out rather than that to be a part of his greatness. All right, yeah, I think that's worth
I'm not
keeping.
I'm not taking away how special it was how great it was, but I just don't think that you can live off that. I don't think that's the norm. I don't think that's the norm. I think that is outside the realm of what's going to happen every season. And how Jordan Love performs is a reality and how he performed and what is a norm to me, right? Like that Chicago playoff game, he played phenomenal.
Yep.
Like that to me is normal. Like that's normal, like than what Caleb Williams did at the end of that game.
Well, and I think over time we'll say this, or you'll say it to me, Homer, all the discussion seems to be about the quarterback, but most of the time, 9 times out of 10, it'll come down to who's the better team, which team played better. And when the other team doesn't play as well, the quarterback could get blamed because he didn't pull it out. And, you know, when the team plays well, nobody's going to really care how the quarterback played because they won the game. But we'll see.
Yeah, that's part of it too. But, like, I always looked at it from our Packers team with Aaron. Right? Like, if Aaron didn't play well, there was no chance we were going to win. Like, that's just – that's just real. I mean, like –
But you always knew he was going to play well. That's like saying if he comes to the park on one leg, we're in trouble.
Yes. but that's what we knew is that he might have started a game a little rough, but we knew by the end of the second quarter, third quarter, he would snap out of it and he would be just fine.
You never, ever doubted his greatness for 1 second of any game.
No. And that's when you know when you don't want to put it all on the quarterback, but if his surrounding cast isn't doing the job for that great quarterback, then you're probably not going to win.
And you want and hope that the Packers offensive players will one day feel the same way about Jordan Love. Or maybe you can never feel exactly that great given the greatness of – but that same feeling where you watch him and you go, I can tell it. I can see it. They believe that they can always win with Jordan Love regardless of what he's done early in the game as long as he's there for the whole game.
Correct.
You tell that's me when you see that.
Yeah, that's the belief that they got to have. And
all right.
Again, maybe they do right now. I don't know. I'm not in that locker room.
Nah, they don't. They don't because you would mention it because you've lived it. All right, we'll close it out very quickly. The Brian Bulaga Soccer Show. He will predict the score for the game on Monday next. As is appropriate for Brian Bulaga, we will have ESPN National in progress. And now, with the U.S. trying to do something for only the second time in the last 95 years, Monday, they will play in Seattle against Belgium. And the final score, according to our soccer expert, Brian Bulaga, will be
2-1, United States.
2-1, United States. And then we will appropriately have even more soccer talk because if they win that one, they'll have a chance to go the furthest that they've ever done in 95 years. And I don't even know if you count 1930. When they finish third. But it's there. 2-1 U.S. over Belgium. So says our soccer expert, Brian Bulaga. Thanks, Doc.
Yep. Take it easy.
You bet. History is possible. And now, honoring Brian Bulaga, it is appropriate that ESPN National in progress. Next.